Over fair. I am sleepy, and the oozy weeds about me twist.
These Buttons We Wear by Keith Dewhurst was based on the novella by Herman Melville, Billy Budd, Sailor. Herman Melville was played by Gerard Murphy, and Eleanor by Monica Dolan. Robert Portal played Long Ghost and Captain Veer, and David Westhead, Gert, Ganzevoort, and Claggart. Young Eleanor was played by Caitlin Welch, Salem by Nathan Osgood, and Liverpool and the Dansker by Simon Greenall. Pip Donaghy played Charles Wilson and Captain Gravely, and Robert Hasty, Johnston and Lieutenant Ratcliffe. Billy Budd was played by Mark Courtley. John Tams arranged the songs and was Rope Yarn and Donald. Sound was by Wilfredo Acosta, Vanessa Spring, and Chris O'Shaughnessy. It was directed by Frank Sterling at Unique for BBC Radio 3.
Play was first broadcast on Radio 3 in January this year. Remember, you can catch up with each of our dramas on 3 for 7 days after broadcast via the BBC Radio 3 website. Well, next week, our first drama on 3 of the new year of 2014 is a new production of Harold Pinter's play Old Times, starring Olivia Williams. That starts at the earlier time of 9:30 next Sunday evening here on BBC Radio 3. Now, what's Sean Rafferty up to?
I'm in. Down these stairs and along this corridor, and then I've got to turn right. It's a very busy house and there are a lot of people here, but I'm not at my destination yet.
This Christmas, Radio 3's Sean Rafferty visits some of the UK's leading musicians in their most creative environments.
This is a very, very musical house.
Their own homes.
Another corridor. You're probably wondering where I'm going.
Julian Bream, John Elliot Gardner, Mitsuko Uchida, James Galway, Thomas Allen, Cleo Lane, Antonio Papano, Neville Mariner.
I can tell you, it will be worth the wait.
Weekdays throughout the holiday period from 4:30 on BBC Radio 3.
And tomorrow at that time, Sean is indeed taking tea with Sir Thomas Allen, and you can catch up with any of his guests that you may have missed via the BBC Radio 3 website. Two more proms for you to enjoy tomorrow night on Radio 3 at 7, the Urban Classic Prom, presented by Clemency Burton Hill, and then at 9:30, another chance to hear this past summer's collaboration between BBC Six Music and Radio 3. Now on BBC Radio 3, it's 11:30, and another chance to visit this year's proms for a recital which is introduced by Christopher Cook.
Welcome to a BBC Proms matinee in which the Royal Albert Hall here gets into the bank holiday spirit, or rather the magnificent organ behind me on the platform is put through its seasonal paces by Richard Hills. Think Blackpool Tower, Brighton Dome and the Odeon Leicester Square. When the Albert Hall organ was built by Henry Willis and Sons in 1871, it was the largest in the world, though that honour now, alas, belongs elsewhere. But after a succession of rebuilds, the last of which was 8 years ago, it remains a formidable instrument. Christened the Voice of Jupiter, it has 147 stops and 9,997 pipes. And if you thought that Jupiter's voice belongs to Bach and Buxtehude and those other classical masters, then Richard Hills intends to convince us otherwise this afternoon. He's an enthusiast for the golden age of the theatre organ, the era of the Wurlitzer, the Compton and the Christie, when the cinema organist rose from the pit in a glow of pink and gold light to give a voice to a silent movie or simply to entertain. His chief weapon then was melody, music with a tune, which is a pretty good description of popular light music. And it's popular music composed by Arthur Sullivan, Fats Waller, Edward German and Roger Quilter that we're going to be here this afternoon, with Richard Hills as his own master of ceremonies introducing the concert from the organ. We begin with the master of popular light music, perhaps Eric Coates, Who hasn't hummed his Dam Busters theme, if only in the bath? And you may have walked through the heart of London whistling the Knightsbridge March. Coates was very good at marches, and better still at matching mood and music in the cinema and on the radio. The least promising of commissions produced elegant and well-made music. Most musical hearts, I'm sure, would have faltered when asked by Associated Television, one of the new ITV companies, to produce a signature tune to launch their afternoon broadcasts in 1955. Not Eric Coates, who sat down and composed the march Sound and Vision, arranged for the organ and played now by this afternoon's soloist, who, of course, is making his BBC Proms debut. Will you please welcome Richard Hills?
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and good afternoon. Welcome to you all, whether you're here in London's Royal Albert Hall or listening in live on BBC Radio 3. It's a great pleasure to be playing for you this afternoon, and I really hope that you will enjoy hearing the great organ here in, well, let's say, somewhat of a different guise. Now, obviously, this is not a theatre organ, but it is a magnificently voiced instrument of the Orchestral or Town Hall School of Organ Building, which in itself was the forerunner to the mighty Wurlitzers, Comptons and Christies, which regularly adorned the airwaves from the 1920s until the 1960s. So I've chosen a programme for you which hopefully will play to those strengths. I thought it would be appropriate, as Christopher mentioned, to begin the programme with the godfather of light music, Eric Coates, and his Sound of Vision, written for ATV in 1955. Happy days indeed. And now we move on to music by Sir Arthur Sullivan. Opening in 1885 at the Savoy Theatre, The Mikado went on to become the most performed of the Savoy operas. And this selection, which takes its inspiration from a recording made in the 1930s by the great organist Quentin MacLean, includes many of the opera's most popular numbers, including Brightly Dawn's Our Wedding Day, A Wandering Minstrel Eye, and, of course, Three Little Maids from School Are We. Once again, thank you ever so much for coming today. I really hope you enjoy the programme. And now on to Mikado Memories.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, so much for Nanki Poo and Yum Yum and all their friends. Well, now we hear two pieces of music which were originally conceived for the piano. First up is Billy Mayall, the famous syncopated pianist who, by the end of his career, had composed some 300 pieces for piano, including the perennial favourite Marigold, if you'll forgive the pun, Bats in the Belfry, and the Four Aces Suite, from which this next piece comes, the Ace of Hearts. And after that, we have music from the pen of the jazz great Thomas Fats Waller. People are often surprised to learn that Waller himself was an accomplished organist, and in fact, he cut several sides of 78 RPM record on the Compton organ of EMI's Abbey Road studio up in the 1930s. He reputedly also had a church job from which he was dismissed by the pastor for jazzing it up a little bit too much. So I hope that there aren't any of my clergy friends in the audience today who get the wrong idea. Nowadays, it would probably have been considered a bonus, but there we are. I don't know if Fats Waller ever played this piece on the organ, but I hope he would approve of my version of his classic, Handful of Keys. First, though, it's Billy Mayall's Ace of Hearts, and after those two, I think we're going to hear a little bit more from Christopher Cook. But on with Billy Mayall. Thank you.
Fat Swallow misbehaving magnificently. Richard Hills has just played a handful of keys written in 1929 by the man they dubbed the Black Horowitz. And before that, Mayall's Ace of Hearts. Well, I'm with Richard Hills now in the organ loft here at the Royal Albert Hall. Richard, we've heard Eric Coates, Arthur Sullivan, and now just Fats Waller. Pretty eclectic programme. What was the kind of principle as you were putting this programme together that guided you?
Well, principally, I was thinking orchestrally, because as you mentioned earlier, this is a very fine orchestrally voiced organ. So I deliberately steered clear of Broadway or Pops tunes, things which needed a drum kit or a heavy tremulation, and stayed instead with the orchestral light classics. So that was really what I had in mind with this instrument.
Much of what you've played has been arranged. I mean, obviously, the Sullivan. And I wonder if there's a kind of tension between, as it were, the original aspirations and intentions of the composer and, of course, the organist to show just what a fine instrument he's playing.
Well, it certainly opens many possibilities to you, yes, but I always think that the justification for doing that comes from the fact that many of those composers actually arranged works themselves for different combinations of instruments, some for piano duet, some even for the organ. So really that was the inspiration in putting together this set.
The town hall organ, which you've talked about, but also the theatre organ, all those Wurlitzers and Comptons that some of us who are a little bit longer in the tooth than others remember clearly, seem to be making a kind of comeback. How do you explain our sudden pleasure in an instrument that was beginning to become extinct?
Well, I think the answer to that lies in the whole question of musical spectrum, really. 50 years ago, light music itself was being banished from the airwaves, and we've seen a wonderful resurgence, thank goodness, of that wonderful tuneful music. And the theatre organ belongs to that sound world. You know, that's what it does best, and hopefully people will rediscover it with fresh ears.
I suppose one of the skills, certainly, of the theatre organist was the ability to improvise. I mean, obviously for silent cinema, but also while entertaining the audience before the sound film when it came began. I mean, how great a role does improvisation play in what you do?
Not as much as you might think, actually. I mean, as you rightly say, improvising is an important tool in the box for any cinema or organist, particularly if you have to accompany a picture. But also, if you want to let fly and jazz it up a bit, that's when it comes into its own. But I tend to pre-plan the arrangements and think about what I'm going to do and how I'm going to use the organ in them. So it's more of the job of an arranger, really, rather than an improviser when putting together this music.
I have to say that sitting alongside you here, listening to you in the first half, you make it look terribly easy. I know it's not. I know it's immensely difficult. What kind of preparation do you have to put in to getting ready for a concert like this?
Well, goodness me, the usual hard practice, of course, comes in when you're learning the notes and indeed arranging the notes for two hands and two feet, because so often we have to start with an orchestral score and pare it down. My modus operandi for that is usually to try and listen to a recording and listen to the important things. I think transcription, for my money, is about knowing what to leave out rather than trying to cram as much as possible in. And then, really, what you have to do is bring it to the instrument you're going to be playing, such as this one, and just put in the hours trying to match the stops that you need for the particular phrase, hopefully by going on what the composer asked for. And then it's just a question of trial and experimentation and listening to every little stop change to make sure it's exactly as you want it, and setting up the buttons, the combination pistons, so that you know where everything is. So it's quite a long process.
And give us an idea, just how much rehearsal have you actually had for this concert?
Here?
Yeah.
Well, I've been very lucky. I've managed to have some slots during the working day, and also some after-hours practice when I came in at midnight and worked through the night, as it were. But I really enjoyed working on the material. Some of the stuff took a long time to set up. One of the pieces you'll hear later took 4 hours, believe it or not, to set up.
But which is that?
It's the Quilter. But there are so many stop changes and different colours that Quilter uses and which I wanted to capture. And really, the only way to do that is to sit here and work it out.
And did you find, as you were setting this up and playing and rehearsing, there were surprising things that existed in this organ you didn't know about? You know, secrets that you can do with it?
Well, I'd been tipped off about the wonderful percussion stops that were here, so I've tried to incorporate all of those. Several of my friends have said, will you be using the bass drum? among other things, to which the answer is yes, of course, but also the carillons, which is like a celesta in the orchestra, and the tubular bells get a workout as well at some point. So
you're really whetting the appetite. Anyway, what are you going to play next for us?
Okay, well, next up we've got music by the man that Sullivan himself thought to be his natural successor, Edward German. And these were written in 1900 for Anthony Hope's play The English Nell. His score for Nell Gwyn, as it was called, included an overture and these three dances that I'm going to play for you now, the three dances from Nell Gwyn. And we have a country dance, a pastoral dance, and finally a finger-busting merrymaker's dance.
Great, we've got our dancing shoes on.
I do hope so.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, ladies and gentlemen. Three dances from Nell Gwynn by Sir Edward German, which I just think is the most charming music, and as you can hear, a little bit of a finger buster as well there with the Merrymakers dance. Well, that unfortunately brings us to the final item in the programme for today. And conforming to that curious habit that we organists have, I'm going to end with an overture. Roger Quilter's children's overture, to be precise, which has been a favourite of organists over the years, including one of my great heroes, Percy Whitlock, who used to include it regularly in his concerts at Bournemouth's Pavilion Theatre. And more recently than that, it was also a great favourite of BBC organist William Davies. Now, hopefully, organ aficionados will be pleased to listen out for some of the wonderfully orchestral stops in this organ, which come to the fore in this work. And I hope you'll enjoy hearing the cor anglais and the clarinet and the French horn and lots of strings to boot as well. This piece skillfully combines the nursery rhymes that we, well, many of us learned in our youth, including boys and girls come out to play, sing a song of sixpence, bar, bar, black sheep, and appropriately enough, oranges and lemons, since we're not too far from St. Clement's to finish. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure to play this programme of favourites for you, and I really hope you've enjoyed hearing this magnificent organ in a different guise. But for now, with thanks to all of you for being such a wonderful bank holiday audience, whether you're here at London's Royal Albert Hall or listening in on BBC Radio 3, I wish you all a very warm good afternoon.
The organist does indeed entertain. A bouquet of children's rhymes for grown-ups with nursery memories, all woven together by Roger Quilter in his A Children's Overture, played at the organ here in the Royal Albert Hall by Roger Hills. And A Children's Overture was given its first ever performance by Sir Henry Wood at a promenade concert at the Old Queen's Hall in 1919. So, light classical music has a long and honourable history at the Proms. Richard Hills, back in the organ loft. One of the very few organists who manages to share his career between what we might think of as the classical and the theatre organ world. And I think he's almost certainly going to be encouraged to give us an encore at the organ here. Yes, indeed. a piece to bring the house down. One of the most recorded jazz compositions of all time, but with some twists in its tail. Knowing nods in the direction of the French composers, Garofalo and Vidor. It was, of course, Tiger Rags, one of the jazz standards, originally recorded and copyrighted by the original Dixieland Jazz Band in 1917 and played today by Richard Hills at the organ here in Royal Albert Hall.
I'm John Shea, and welcome to another edition of BBC Radio 3 Through the Night, where you can hear Tchaikovsky's Serenade for Strings and Bach Motet in just over an hour. First, a concert from February 2013 by the Danish National Chamber Orchestra. Adam Fischer conducts them in Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante for violin and viola, and Beethoven's First Symphony, and to begin, Haydn. The Symphony No. 88 in G was one of his first, after the success of his six Paris symphonies, and it's full of particularly deft orchestration. The beautiful second movement, for example, with a tender solo for oboe and cello, or the hurdy-gurdy effects in the third movement. It all begins with this discreet call to attention.
Thank you.